The Voice of the Cape, 91.3 FM stereo.
In conversation with Shafiq Morden.
Indeed, we are in conversation with, and it's time for our weekly Middle East report. It's done in partnership with a London-based Middle East monitor. Where do you find them? You don't have to go there by aeroplane. You just go www.middleeastmonitor.com and you'll be there. Twitter handle Middle East MNT. Coming up in today's show, Human Rights Watch report concludes Israel is an apartheid state committing apartheid against Palestinians. Tensions in Jerusalem as hundreds of Palestinians are injured by some crazies. Egypt executes 17 prisoners, including an 80-year-old Quranic teacher. Online for comment is Memo multimedia journalist Jihan Alfara. Jihan, welcome.
Thank you, Shafiq. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And I think the Human Rights Watch report really has made a big splash. It's getting a lot of coverage, it seems.
It is. I mean, talking about apartheid, anyone looking at Israeli policies and behavior in Palestine really knows. It's been said again and again, whether by human rights groups, including actually an Israeli rights group, Beit Salem, a couple of months ago. They described Israel as an apartheid state that perpetuates Jewish supremacy. And we know also at the moment that Israel is in fact under investigation by the International Criminal Court as well for war crimes committed against Palestinians. But this report, you know, Human Rights Watch laid it out flat in this very, very comprehensive study. And it's basically examined Israel's treatment of Palestinians over the years. And it concludes, as you said, that Israel is an apartheid, is committing apartheid against Palestinians, and that Israel's dominion over the lives of Palestinians more severely in the occupied territories, but also, you know, the Palestinian citizens of Israel is in fact apartheid and a crime against humanity, where you've got, you know, the Israeli government ruling over two different groups of people, roughly of the same size, and yet systematically and as a matter of state policy, privileging Jewish Israelis while marginalizing and suppressing Palestinians. And the report itself is, it's quite long. It's about 200 pages, 213 to be exact, and it looks in detail at years of documentation, from case studies, you know, to statements by officials and government documents and so on, and it explains apartheid as a crime against humanity, and they lay out three main elements of apartheid. They said that the first element was intent to assert this domination by, you know, one racial group over the, another, and the context of systematic oppression by the dominant group had to exist, and obviously inhumane acts. And then the report, you know, goes on to give examples of these various elements as perpetuated by Israel against Palestinians. You know, it looks at various laws that exclude Palestinians from, you know, hundreds of small, pretty much Jewish towns. Also lots of discriminatory policies, you know, state budgets, for example, that allocate, you know, only a fraction of resources to Palestinian schools compared to those, you know, serving Jewish Israeli children. The military rule imposed on the Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, while, you know, you've got Jewish Israelis living in illegal settlements there, but they are, you know, given full rights under Israel's civil law. In comparison, you know, the restrictions of movement on those living in Gaza, the confiscation of land in the West Bank, over a third of land in the West Bank by, you know, Israeli authorities, occupation authorities. And within Israel itself as well, you know, you've got the nation state law, which, you know, sets Israel out as the nation state of the Jewish people, which by default, you know, marginalizes the Palestinian citizens of Israel and many other policies that are, you know, clearly in violation of international law. Human Rights Watch actually called on global powers to, you know, make any sort of trade deals or arms sales to Israel, you know, conditional on the occupation, you know, taking real steps to, you know, end the commission of these crimes.
Yeah, it's what I call a No Place to Hide report. It really is. It's kind of, yeah. It's a watershed report, I think, and... I think what's significant about it is not necessarily that it declares Israel an apartheid state. I think it actually is more an indictment on the countries that have been supporting what's been going on all these years.
And Israel came out and condemned the report. You know, they said it was false, and they accused Human Rights Watch of anti-Israel bias. But that's to be expected. I mean, every time somebody comes out, saying it as it is, you know, saying that, you know, these policies are apartheid. Even a few years ago, I think the head of the UN's Economic and Social Commission, she was forced to withdraw a report that accused Israel of imposing an apartheid regime, and was then forced to resign. And like I said, also Beit Salem recently, they said it was apartheid, and they also, you know, had to deal with the, you know, all that, you know, condemnation and, you know, Israeli officials talking about it, but. You know, just last week we were talking about this systematic demolition of Palestinian homes, weren't we?
Yes.
Yeah, and in the context of that report, you know, you've got evidence, and it shows, it presents that in a clear way that, you know, Israel is constantly trying to maximize, you know, the land for Jewish communities, but at the same time, and, you know, building more and more settlements, illegal settlements, and at the same time trying to limit, Palestinian freedoms, concentrate them in specific dense, population areas, and just in general, the policies that they deal with the Palestinian population, whether in the occupied territories or even the Palestinian citizens, it's very clear, you know, the discrimination and the different ways in which they deal with either the Israeli, you know, the Jewish Israelis or the Palestinians.
Absolutely. I mean, and nothing could be more indicative or illustrative of this than the horrific, absolutely horrific footage of Jewish Zionist crazies running through the streets and beating up Palestinians and smashing a car. Xenophobia on steroids, one of the most horrific things I've seen for a very long time, that people in Israel have got the confidence that they can walk through the streets and bash Palestinians and not expect to get punished for it.
Yep, not just not expect to be punished, but even feel protection by Israeli forces who, you know, always crack down on the Palestinians. And at the same time, if there is a confrontation, say, whether it's what happened in Jerusalem, I mean, what happened specifically was last week, you know, on Friday, you had a few hundred Israeli settlers and far-right groups, you know, organize a march, actually chanting, you know, death to Arabs and, you know, doing all that near one of the, you know, Damascus Gate. In Jerusalem, it's basically the main entry to the Old City, and it provides access to Al-Aqsa Mosque, where Palestinians usually go, especially now in Ramadan, to pray. But since the start of Ramadan, actually, there's been a lot of restrictions placed by Israeli forces in occupied East Jerusalem, you know, trying to hinder the movement of Palestinians, these restrictions, you know, prevent them from religious activities now that we're in, you know, the holy month of Ramadan, or gatherings and even night raids and attacks by both Israeli forces and settlers against Palestinians have been increasing, especially after prayers at Al-Aqsa Mosque, you know. Those have been increasing since the start of the month, and now you've got these settlers, you know, organizing this march. And of course, what's happened over the past few days since this march is, obviously they're attacking Palestinians, they're assaulting Palestinians, they're, you know, chanting all these, you know, hate-filled statements. Then of course the Palestinians went and organized a counter-protest. And when that happened, you know, this confrontation, you know, you had more than 100 Palestinians injured as a result of this. And, you know, you've got a few dozen of them also detained. In fact, I think over the past few days, over 100 now detained by Israeli forces who also used tear gas against the Palestinians to sort of disperse them and against the worshippers, and while at the same time trying to sort of push back the settler protests, you know, mounted officers on horses trying to push them back. But it's clear, you know, how they deal with the Palestinians and how they deal with the Israeli settlers.
Yeah, absolute brutality. Although I did see some footage of Palestinian youths destroying barricades that the Israeli police has set up, and the police, I think, were so stunned for a couple of seconds they didn't know what to do. So that certainly was.
Basically, you know, you've got these marches and these settlers, you know, trying to sort of erase the Palestinian Muslim character of the holy city, right? And, you know, trying to make it harder and harder for Palestinian. But as you said, all these videos, you can see them coming out, you know, this incredible sort of willpower and defiance of the Palestinian youth standing up to the settler attacks, but also defying and protesting against these restrictions placed by the occupation authorities in general. And they managed to actually Israeli forces to withdraw from the area and remove these iron barricades that were designed, you know, and put in place to try and close the area to Palestinian worshippers, you know, and restrict their access to Al-Aqsa Mosque. There were many scenes of celebration that came out. You see the youth, you know, celebrating this withdrawal, even though actually it was short-lived. Israeli forces did come back and sort of start to attack the protesters with tear gas and, you know, flash grenades and so on, and detained some of them. But it's that willpower, right, to defy and to sort of stay you know, strong, and it's become part of life for Palestinians, really, in Jerusalem. They're always under pressure by Israeli authorities and by Israeli settlers, and this wasn't the first time that Israel tried to use, you know, metal barricades, as well as electronic gates, even before they've used that to try and control the Palestinians and their movement in Jerusalem. But, you know, just like in the past, they've managed to defeat these measures and get them removed every time. But you've got this provocation is continuous, whether it's by the, you know, the Israeli forces or the settlers. You know, you've got settlers now, you know, trying to set fire to Palestinian homes as well, and, you know, call for those who protest to be killed. It's a bleak situation for Jerusalemite people, you know, Palestinian residents in Jerusalem. But they're definitely staying strong in the face of all of that.
Yeah, they're not going anywhere in a hurry. Let's face that.
But you know, this is the first time actually since we've talked about the UAE normalization deal with Israel previously, and this is the first time that the UAE has come out now to sort of criticize these mobs of Israeli far right groups and you know, extremist settlers that come out and, you know, assaulted Palestinians. So the UAE come out and said, you know, hey, we're concerned, right?
Yeah, well, I mean,
so
I mean,
it sort of shows you, it paints a picture for you that even the UAE come out to criticize this.
Yeah, my prediction is that these marriages are not going to last. And that might be sort of just a little tear in the fabric of it. Our last story, Jihan, when you think things couldn't get worse in Egypt, that Sisi couldn't get worse, he does. 17 prisoners executed, including an 80-year-old Quranic teacher. That kind of blew me away. Why do you want to execute an 80-year-old man? I just have no idea.
Well, you know, Shafiq, this is just, you know, the latest wave of mass execution. executions in Egypt, you know, 17 prisoners, and it was done actually in complete secrecy in the prison without notifying even the their families in advance. And these men were all convicted, including the 80-year-old. They were convicted of attacking a police station in 2013 and killing 13 policemen. The case is known in the media as the Kardasa massacre. But there's been a lot of concern, you know, among human rights groups over, you know, due process and the convictions themselves. And many had said now that these charges were fabricated against these men. You know, the Arab Organization for Human Rights here in the UK said that the identity of the individuals who actually raided the station are still unknown to this day, and that Egyptian authorities actually did not present any concrete evidence linking these men to that attack. They also said that a lot of the confessions and testimonies were extracted under torture, and so they would be inadmissible, especially the Quran teacher, you know, an 80-year-old who has serious health problems as well, you know, very unlikely that he would have taken part in a crime like that. But more than that, there's been eyewitnesses who said that he was nowhere near Kardasa police station on the day of the raid and actually refused to sign written statements confirming his participation, but still, all of that was ignored by the courts, and he was still executed. And his lawyer even said that, you know, he'd never committed a crime in his life. But again, this is just another wave of crackdown on dissent, and mass executions have become, you know, the norm, sadly. And speaking of executions in Egypt, actually, a new report was published, I think, last week by Amnesty International about the use of death penalty, and it showed actually that Egypt had seen a 300% rise in executions in 2020 compared to, you know, 2019, the year before, you know, which makes Egypt the world's third most frequent executioner after China and Iran. And a lot of these executions, you know, are applied to political prisoners, you know, mostly tried in mass trials and tortured to extract confessions to use as evidence. And at the moment, there's like an estimated 60,000 political prisoners or so in Egypt. That's become one of the main growing concerns of human rights groups all over the world now when it comes to Egypt. And recently, you know, a number of human rights groups, I think about a dozen or 14 groups and NGOs, including Amnesty and Human Rights Watch, they called on the Biden administration in the U.S. not to waive the human rights condition that apply to an aid package to Egypt. It's sad.
It certainly is. Jihan Al-Farah, we have to leave it there. Multimedia journalist at Memo, the Middle East Monitor. You can get them at www.middleeastmonitor.com, Twitter handle @MiddleEastMNT. And they will be back next Thursday, and we'll be talking matters Middle East next Thursday with Memo. Jihan, thanks for chatting to us.
Thank you, Shafiq.
In conversation with Shafiq Warden.
In an ever-changing